This is Pure Decking, show number 496 for Thursday, October the 6th, 1866. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and the fact that I personally find coughing into the microphone hilarious. So...
He does.
I will try to hit the cough button, but I'm going to tell you right now that the cough button is not in the most convenient location as far as my desk setup goes. So, sorry. of course.
Drink.
Of course. So, every time I cough, go ahead and hit that, you know, take a drink. Especially if you're driving. You know, make it interesting.
Yeah, Laura, yeah, Laura, every time he coughs, hit the horn on your car, man.
So, probably going to be a short show tonight. We'll see. But I guess we'll start with a couple of stories here on the Opus hack. Especially since RU would actually know more about it than I will. So
That would be Optus.
Optus. Well, Opus, yep. Optus. Yeah, okay, I see. We'll start with this article from Bleeping Computer. Optus confirmed yesterday that 2.1 million customers had government identification numbers compromised during a cyber attack last month. In a press statement released yesterday, the mobile carrier updated the information regarding the personal data of 9.8 million customers exposed during the attack. Now, you've told me before that Australia only has like two ISPs. So this is like half the country that uses the internet.
One third,
okay.
Yeah, we've got a couple of ISPs, but they all pretty much link to the two big carriers. But yeah, Optus is definitely in the top three of providers. It's been around the longest. Telstra is probably number one.
In an investigation, but, yeah. Optus confirmed that a total of 2.1 million customers had valid or expired ID document numbers exposed to hackers. Of these 2.1 million, 1.2 million had at least one number from a current and valid form of identification compromised, and 900,000 had ID numbers exposed but from documents that are now expired. Quote, today's update helps provide more clarity for our customers, unquote, reads the press statement. Quote, having worked with government agencies to meticulously analyze the data for the company's 9.8 million customers, Optus can confirm the exposed information did not contain valid or current document ID numbers for some 7.7 million customers. However, all 9.8, again, you're reading the wrong headline. It's like, no, look at the number of people who were not exposed. It's like, yeah, that's great. You still had over a million people exposed. That's a fuck you moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, all 9.8 million customers had other personal information exposed, including email addresses, date of birth, or phone numbers. Optus has sent SMS text messages to customers whose ID numbers were compromised in the cyber attack with information on their next steps. Customers whose driver license details were compromised can request a new driver's license number to prevent identity theft or fraudulent activity. The threat actor had initially attempted to extort Optus with a $1 million ransom demand not to publish or sell the stolen data. After not receiving the payment, the hacker leaked the data of 10,000 customers on a hacking forum that include name, address, email address, phone number, and date of birth. A few days later, feeling the pressure of law enforcement, the hacker apologized to Optus and its customers and claims to have deleted all the stolen data. And they've even got a screenshot of the forum here. Of course, they don't say what forum it is. I could probably take a guess just looking at it, but... I'm wrong. It is breach forms. Okay, it is in the screenshot. I was wrong. I just didn't see it. It's like, it looks like breach, but I wasn't sure. And, of course, it's got an anime.
I just pulled it up, but I'm like, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yep. No, it does say breach in there. They just... Yeah, This is a little weird that the hacker's like, oh, I'm sorry. And of course, they have an anime avatar there. However, there's no way to determine if the hacker actually deleted the data. All Optus users should assume that threat actors may use their data in future fraud or phishing attacks. Therefore, it is strongly advised to be wary of any emails claiming to be from Optus asking you to provide further information or log into your account. If you receive an email or an SMS text claiming to be from Optus, directly log into the company site and review any messages there. So, oh, I mean, there's some weirdness here with this because...
Dude, I did not believe this story at all.
Okay.
I don't believe the legitimacy of it. I'm going to put the tinfoil hat on here. This is all part of getting digital ID passed in the country.
Well, that's my next story.
Yeah, that's because, yeah, law enforcement weren't really concerned about it. You know, it was a big meh. No one in government really cared. And I'm like, this is a big story. If true, right?
Yep.
Turns out it's probably not true. Yeah, they probably compromised 10,000 people just to get an agenda through. So, but that's just me wearing the tinfoil hat.
Well,
they arrested someone. They said they arrested someone who was in possession of the material. Now that could be they took a screenshot of. Who fucking knows? I'm just hitting X to doubt, man.
Well, looking at what the quote unquote hacker posted to the breach forum here. Too many eyes. Will not sell data to anyone. We can't, even if we want to, personally delete a data from the drive. One only copy. Sorry to, and misspelled to. Well, it's not misspelled, but it's the wrong. It's T-O-O. Sorry yeah. to 10,200 Australians whose data was leaked. Australians looks like it's misspelled. Australia will see no gain in fraud. This can be monitored. Maybe for 10,200 Australian, but rest of population, no. Very sorry to you. Deepest apology to Opus for this. Hope all goes well from this. Opus, if you're reading, we would have reported exploit if you had method to contact. No security mail, no bug bounty, no way to message. Ransom not paid, we don't care anymore. Was mistake to scrape published data in first place. So...
sloppy job, whoever did.
Yeah, the broken English, you know, is a nice touch.
It is. No one asked the real big question, though, Morps. Why was the information in plain text? It's the only question I want answered, but no one can answer it.
Oh, I can answer that question. It's because it was cheaper. Nobody bothered to upgrade. They're probably using a system that was written in the 80s, and nobody's bothered to update it since.
Yeah, but I want Optus to come out and go, yeah, we're stingy with our security. What are you going to do?
Yeah, they ain't going to do that.
Exactly.
So here's the follow-up story from Reuters. Australia on Thursday proposed an overhaul of consumer privacy rules that will help facilitate targeted data sharing between telecommunications firms and banks following a massive data breach at Optus, the company's second largest mobile provider. Last month, cyber attack on Optus, owned by Singapore Telecommunications Limited, was one of Australia's biggest data breaches and compromised data of up to 10 million customers, including home addresses, driver's license, and passport numbers. These changes will enable telcos to share government-issued identification documents with banks to allow them to implement enhanced monitoring for customers impacted by data breaches. Quote, they've been carefully designed with strong privacy and security safeguards to ensure that only limited information can be made available temporarily to prevent and respond to cybersecurity incidents, fraud, scams, and related activities, unquote, Treasurer Jim Chalmers said during a media conference. During cybersecurity incidents, you know, that they're constantly happening, so temporarily, huh? Yeah, I don't think he knows how data works.
No, none of them do, dude. I'm telling you right now, none of them do.
The government will recommend to the Governor General to amend privacy regulations, he said. The proposed changes will also allow for increased fraud detection in the broader financial services sector through existing industry mechanisms to report fraudulent transactions, such as fraud information exchanges. Chalmers said the government would not disclose details of financial institutions that receive the data from Optus to due to data security reasons. Information received must be destroyed by banks when it is no longer required and can be only used for the sole purpose of preventing or responding to cybersecurity incidents, fraud, scam activity, identity theft, the treasurer said. Australians' telecommunications, financial, and government sectors have been on high alert since the cyber attack at Optus and has flagged changes to privacy rules to help banks take immediate action to prevent fraudulent transactions. The Australian government, which believes the breach at Optus was due to basic security gap, has slammed the company for describing the attack as sophisticated and for delays in updating affected customers. So, here come the rules changes as a result of this breach. As opposed to simply holding Optus responsible.
Right.
Financially. They're going to use this to get law changes on the books. They're already saying, oh no, now the financial institutions can get data for fraud prevention. But once that data is shared, that data is shared. I mean, yeah, sure, okay, we've got regulations that say you can only use it for this, this, and this. I've dealt with the federal audit boards. I'm not going to say that, you know, it's easy to pull things over on them, but they kind of trust the institution to provide them all the relevant information.
Yeah.
Just going to throw that out there. The reviews of these things are generally not independent. So the opportunity for abuse is there. And as you said, since they're already going to be sharing this information from government to financial institution, the next step would be a digital ID, wouldn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I'm a cynic, man. Okay.
So I don't know. It's interesting to me that instead of trying to hold this large company accountable, I mean, surely they have the financial resources to make restitution for this. And I realize that, you know, you are victim blaming a bit and that they were the ones who got hacked, but
their fucking job. You got one fucking job. Do it.
And that's kind of the thing, right? It's like, on one hand, if a company is hacked, yes, they were a victim of somebody taking advantage. But it's a company's job to handle your data responsibly.
Right.
And I don't know the right way to go about this. You know, it's easy to say there ought to be a law, but you have to remember when you say there ought to be a law, what you're really saying is men with guns should come to people's homes to enforce that law, because that's ultimately how laws are enforced at the end of the day. You know, you don't pay your taxes long enough, I guarantee people with guns will show up to collect them.
Oh, no doubt. But I mean, Optus needs to be leveled with a fine that actually matters to start with. You know?
Yeah.
That would be a good fucking start. Maybe the CEO needs to fuck off. You know, put another person in. The head of security needs to go. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Well, it's one of these things where they need to look into what was the breach, why was that? Why was the risk that allowed the breach allowed to continue? Had it been identified internally in the company? And if so, why wasn't it remediated or repaired?
Well, see my previous tin hat fucking statement of this is all bullshit. It's just to get the ID in there. There's no... Any other company, they'd be talking about a massive fine by now. They're not even talking about restitution. You see
I mean, if nothing else, just to recoup the cost of having to reissue all these licenses?
Right. You know, maybe a little compensation for the undue stress you've caused people worrying about whether their shit's going to be accessed.
You know, maybe if nothing else, pay for the fucking identity theft monitoring for a couple of months.
It could do something, but they don't. They're not being required to do anything, which makes me think, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
just saying it. The whole fucking story stinks head to toe. Such are the times, right?
Sorry. Say what?
Such are the times we live in. Yeah. Everything's bullshit.
Well, let's continue the train of bullshit. You'll like this one. This is from Engadget. White House unveils its blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights.
Oh God, no.
Proving further the statement that these people don't understand what they're talking about. Can we get a digital Bill of Rights
first? Yeah, can we get a digital Bill of Rights first before we give robots fucking? Yeah.
So, from Engadget, between Amazon using tech to extract more productivity from its workers, Clearview AI harvesting our facial features, schools trying to scan children's rooms before exams, and Facebook's whole accused of contributing to genocide thing. Wait, what was Facebook accused of contributing to genocide? Oh, the Myanmar stuff.
I missed that.
The Myanmar stuff.
I missed that one.
That's a Guardian link they have in there. Facebook, Rohingya suing Facebook for over 150 billion euros over the Myanmar genocide, huh? Wow. There's an article. When's that from?
Didn't think they were involved in that, but hey.
When was this published? This is from December. I think we missed that one. Shit.
I was going to say, that one totally missed my radar.
The same technologies that have brought us the wonders of the modern world have also brought us some of the horrors of the modern world. And apparently the Biden administration isn't going to stand for it. Dun, dun, dun. On Tuesday, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy released its long-awaited blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights. The document will, quote, help to guide the design, development, and deployment of artificial intelligence and other automated systems so that they protect the rights of the American public, unquote, per a White House press release. As such, the Bill of Rights will advocate for five principles: safe and effective systems, algorithmic discrimination protection, data privacy, notice and explanation, and human alternatives consideration and fallback. Quote, simply put, systems should work, they shouldn't discriminate, and they shouldn't use data indiscriminately. Unquote. Bill of Rights co-writer, oh, there's a name, Suresh Venkatesmanian, wrote in a tweet thread Tuesday. And I know I've massacred that guy's name, and I'm going to copy and paste that guy's name into the IRC and into the TeamSpeak right here so you can see exactly why I stumbled on that one. It's like that one honestly looks like a copy and paste error. I don't mean to make fun of the guy's name, but good Lord. Quote, they should be visible and easy to understand. They shouldn't eliminate human interlocutors. Unquote. Quote, there were thousands of edits and comments made to the document that made the document strong, rich, and detailed. Unquote. Venki, we're going to call him Venki now because I don't want to try to mess up the name again, continued. Quote, the AI Bill of Rights reflects, as befits the title, a consensus broad and deep American vision of how to govern the automated technologies that impact our lives, unquote. Quote, automated technologies are driving remarkable innovations and shaping important decisions that impact people's rights, opportunities, and access. The blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights is for everyone who interacts daily with these powerful technologies and every person whose life has been altered by unaccountable algorithms, unquote, said the Office of Science and Technology Policy Director, Deputy Director for Science and Society, there's a business card, Dr. Alondra Nelson. Quote, the practices laid out in the blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights aren't just aspirational. They are achievable and urgently necessary to build technologies and a society that works for all of us, unquote. The administration has spent more than a year developing the Bill of Rights to its current state, and including extensive public outreach through panel discussions, public listening sessions, and meetings with everyone from workers and activists to CEOs and entrepreneurs. Then how come this is the first I've heard of it? Because I consider myself a technologist or a techno-lust, I'm not sure which, and this is the first I've heard of it. In addition to the bill itself, the OSTP has also released a companion work, From Principles to Practice, which details concrete steps for both government and NGO entities, public and private companies alike, to take to ensure they are operating within the scope and spirit of the document. Quote, effectively implementing these processes requires the cooperation and collaboration among industry, civil society, researchers, policymakers, technologists, and the public, unquote. The Bill of Rights reads, of course, the blueprint details no actual enforcement mechanisms. There's another problem with this. It's the government putting out a feel-good document.
Yeah.
There is not a single company out there that is going to pay this thing any real mind. They're going to sink all this time and resources into putting out this document. And unless they start auditing companies over it, make laws against it, it will be ignored. I don't know if it's any good or not. I mean, given the people in charge of writing it, probably, eh. But they're talking about algorithmic discrimination and human fallback. And it sounds very, very aspirational without any real understanding of how that stuff works.
Well, how do you stop AI from being discriminatory?
Well, especially when...
You can't. It
especially
doesn't work
if it's
like
based
that.
Off real data and it's like giving you real statistics.
Uh-huh. You can see where I'm going.
Yeah.
It doesn't fucking work. I mean, you can have all the equity you fucking want, but it ain't going to work. You're not going to get the outcome you desire. It's...
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if I can see this, these people writing that legislation aren't smart enough to be writing it.
Well, these people writing the legislation are people who have probably largely come out of academia, and they probably have never actually worked in a real system.
Well, like I think society is a little bit fucking pissed off with these fucking think tanks, man. I'm sick of the shit they come up with. Because it's all bullshit.
Well, this is the first I've heard of the damned thing, so they're not obviously advertising it very widely.
No, because I don't want real input from people actually working in the industry.
We should ask Static about it. See if he's heard of it.
Yeah, well, he's in the same thing. He's high up enough to know all about it, and plus, he's working with some sophisticated AI shit, from what I understand. Oh yeah, we'll talk to him after the show. But being governed by people who've never fucking done anything or had any experience. The greatest fucking adventure is a trip to Epstein Island on the Lolita Express.
Well, I forget what the movie was. I think it was Rodney Dangerfield, but his kid's in college and he goes back to college.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. He goes back to get a business degree.
Yeah, and the Static's response was just maniacal laughter. So no, he's never heard of it either.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's a good movie.
But there's a scene in it where there's a professor who's detailing how to properly run a business, and the Dangerfield's character goes, "Oh, you forgot a lot of stuff," and he starts listing it all out, and he's like, "That stuff has no place in a proper business." He's like, "Okay."
Good luck.
It's like, you know, and it's very clear somebody who's ran a business versus somebody who's thought about it a lot and never actually been in the field.
Yeah. So,
and, you know, there is something to be said for philosophy. There is certainly something to be said for, but, you know, being an academic, but you have to get out of theory at some point.
Well, it's say when I was working back or the accident, you'd get your blueprints or your plans from the architect, and I'm looking at it and I'm going, this isn't going to work. And the architect's like, just do it. I'm like, no, it can't work in a physical aspect. It does not work.
It's like that will collapse, you know, if we build that.
Well, it's not long enough, too short, not wide enough. You know what I mean? To get everything to fit correctly. Like, I see your dimensions, but that's not the dimensions of this room. You know, well, we had to change some things after, but you never updated your plans. No, well, it costs too much money to go reprint everything. We just change it on the fly.
Actual story from building my house. Because the builder I went with, you know, they kind of had a, I guess you'd call it a cookie cutter approach to housing. They had several floor plans that their company used. And my house was like the second one of that particular plan that they'd built in this area with these people, you know, with the people they're working with locally, the builders.
Yeah.
Whoo, boy, doing the walkthroughs, I was finding things. The big one, the funniest one was clearance on the stairs. So where they had put a closet in my bedroom basically was over the stairs. But the way they had built it meant that at one point, if they had finished it the way it was, it would have been about a 5-foot clearance from the bottom of the stairs to the ceiling of, you know, of the stairwell where the closet is. So now the back of that closet has a ramp in it because they had to cut it off at an angle to get the clearance.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
And I mean, it's funny. It doesn't really bother me because you can still put shoes on the ramp and it's fine. But it was one of these things where it was just like, you know, when I was going through the house after they put in the stairs and looking at things, I called them. I'm like, this isn't right because I'm almost hitting my head going up the stairs. And they came out and they looked at it and they said, oh, shit, that's not right. And, oh, yeah, they had their carpenter come out and spend a ton of time fixing it.
Because the carpenter, when building it, would have seen the fucking problem and hit fuck it. Not my problem.
There's a few other things. Drywallers are bad about fuck it, not my problem, too.
Uh-huh. They will fucking drywall over anything, man.
Yes, they did. They had to come out and find a couple of different things that got drywalled over.
Yeah.
Specifically, the one that comes to mind is the water tap for my refrigerator. It's like, guys, where's the water spigot for the refrigerator? I went back through pictures I had taken and found it, and I had to email it to the builder because they had to come out and, you know, they're like, you said you took pictures? Yeah, can you send us those? Oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, there's a little tip there, Morps. Nobody who does drywall actually wanted to do drywall as a career.
I believe that.
Yeah, that's not, no one says, you know what, I want to hang drywall for the rest of my life.
Well, it's not easy work. The couple of times I've done it, it's not fun.
Fucking backbreaking. Dude, try hanging the shit on the ceiling.
I've done that. It sucks.
Yeah, it sucks.
It fucking sucks. I helped my dad redo a workshop, and we ended up coming up with a jig to hold the shit up because having me trying to be up there with my back pressing it to the ceiling only worked for a little bit. I mean, it was just, yeah.
Yeah. And good luck, Saad, with your drywall next weekend.
So.
Anyway, next story.
Next story is from The Verge. Let's see. Seeing how long my voice is going to hold out, too. I hear it getting worse.
Yeah, it's starting to scratch.
So, The Verge. FCC threatens to block calls from carriers for letting robocalls run rampant. This is actually kind of cool. The Federal Communications Commission is threatening to block calls from voice services providers that have yet to take meaningful action against illegal robocalls. On Monday, the FCC announced that it was beginning the process to remove providers from the agency's robocall mitigation database for failing to fully implement stir-shaken anti-robocall protocols into their networks. If the companies fail to meet these requirements over the next 2 weeks, compliant providers will be forced to block their calls. So that's what that means when they say they're taking them out of the database. For anyone who wants to be compliant with the FCC's regulations, which means any American telecom operator, they have to block anybody who's not in there. It's like, if you're not a listed approved provider, you're blocked. On one hand, it's terrible for telecom competition. On the other hand, might actually fucking see something happen with robocalls.
Well, that just means I won't get any more phone calls.
Yeah, at all.
Well, no one calls landlines anymore. Okay.
So the article goes on talking about it. There is some question about how useful is stir-shaken as a protocol, but I mean, it's they're at least doing fucking something, right? I mean, you're about 10 years too late, but, you know, hey.
Yeah. It's something, though.
Well, it's still not going to fix the main problem, which is people who get their VoIP accounts popped, and then those are used for the robocalls until somebody figures out the account's popped.
Yep.
You know, it's like people don't run phishing operations from their own web servers anymore. They go find a WordPress and hack that. So, next article, and it is definitely going to be a short show tonight, because I hear my voice getting worse, and I don't have anything for Dojo, so we're just going to finish it up. Next article is from PCMag.com. All phones, tablets, and cameras must use USB-C for charging in the EU by 2024. Consumers in the European Union can look forward to all the new smartphones, tablets, and digital cameras having a USB-C port for charging before the end of 2024. The European Parliament today confirmed that the USB Type-C is set to become the new standard for portable devices for both charging and data transfers. Following its deal announced in June, the EP said the port will become mandatory for phones, tablets, and cameras in 2024, and then for laptops from spring of 2026. The new rule extends further than that, though. As the EP states, regardless of the manufacturer, all new mobile phones, tablets, digital cameras, headphones and headsets, handheld video game consoles and portable speakers, e-readers, keyboards, mice, portable navigation systems, earbuds, and laptops that are rechargeable via a wired cable operating with a power delivery of up to 100 watts will have to be equipped with USB Type-C port. Any device that supports fast charging will now also have to have the same charging speed so they can all work and recharge at the same speed using a compatible charger. Although we expect the iPhone...
Okay, so the real fast charge is now no longer allowed to be done.
Yep.
You just dragged everybody down.
Everyone
to
has
one
to use
shit
the same...
fucking level. Everyone's...
It's probably
going to
be
that.
USB power delivery or something like that.
Yep.
So...
Yeah, fuck the EU.
Although we expect the iPhone 15 to be the first with the USB-C port, Apple will be forced to make the switch for iPhone 16 if it wants to sell any devices in the EU. Of course, it could avoid the switch completely by shipping an iPhone with no ports, which they might do since wireless charging has been a pretty common thing for a while now. European Commission is also looking to harmonize interoperability requirements for wireless charging to avoid lock-in. So Apple would need to keep that in mind, too. Well, I think most people only use the one wireless charging standard. I'm not aware of multiple wireless charging standards. It's all that Quibi or whatever it is. I forget what it's actually called.
Yeah, no, I'm not up on my phone stuff, man. I don't know.
One thing's for sure, the days of the Lightning port really are numbered, and it could result in a new type of dongle being required to allow older accessories to keep working through USB-C. So, no surprise there. We've talked about this plenty of times. My only real concern...
It's been coming.
My only real concern with it is what happens in 10 years when something is better than USB-C that comes out.
Oh, we just can never change.
Well, it'd be like seatbelts.
That's what they'll say.
Seatbelts in the United States haven't changed in, what, 40 years?
Don't get me started, man. Don't get me started.
So
I want my fucking five-point harness.
Well, you know, I mean, I've been talking to you guys a little bit, and I'm looking at new cars, and guess what? They all have the exact same type of seatbelt as the first fucking car I owned.
Uh-huh. Yep. That new technology.
And the last story I have from tonight is also from PC World. This one's just funny. ASRock is sabotaging its own motherboards. So... You'd think a company selling motherboards directly to desktop PC builders would have a little bit of faith that those users can assemble a PC. Apparently, that's not the case for ASRock. At least some variants of its high-end motherboards for the new AM5 socket. Several Reddit users have opened their X670E motherboards to find a huge sticker covering the RAM DIMM slots which at least some cases has caused damage to the slots when the user was trying to remove it. According to the Reddit posts spotted by TechSpot, the sticker is ostensibly meant to guide for installing the RAM. It shows you where to place single or double DIMMs if you're not using all four slots simultaneously, and how long to expect the very lengthy first boot to take based on how much memory is installed. All helpful information. It's understandable that ASRock would want to highlight it. Maybe a lot of people were returning motherboards after putting one DIMM in the wrong slot and watching the computer fail to boot. But there had to be a better solution than putting a piece of sticking a piece of paper directly on top of hundreds of sensitive electrical contacts complete with adhesive. Several users reported that the sticker tore when they removed it, leaving behind a sticky residue and an incredibly delicate cleanup job. Buyers ready to assemble brand new ScreenFast Ryzen 7000 desktops with these pricey motherboards were not amused. Some had luck removing the stickers by applying heat beforehand. Others were left with a sticky mess that made the RAM slots inoperative. A story has a happy ending, satisfactory one. Official statement from ASRock says the company will accept exchanges on motherboards that have sticker residue on the RAM slots. It also says that the updated version of the BIOS solves the long initial boot problem, thus new motherboards won't come with the sticker. So, yeah. So these are, you know, DDR5 slots. So they have all these tiny little contacts. Yep. And they put, somebody in marketing put a fucking sticker over the DIMM slots.
It's like, and you know, somebody in engineering went, hey, Ted, this is going to fuck up real quick.
Yeah, you know, somebody went into their boss's office and said, this is a bad idea. When they go to remove that sticker, they're going to rip the contacts out of the RAM slots. And they said, well, it's, you know, that was marketing's decision, not ours. We can't fix it. And here you go. I mean, that's just dumb. So, I don't know what else to say to that other than just way to go, buddy.
Yeah, it's stupid.
That's all I got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure decking every Thursday. No dojo tonight. Sorry. We're cutting it short. You can hear my voice has been getting, you know, worse. I was really hoping to be over this by now, but what are you going to do? Pure decking.
That's that monkeypox.
Yeah, there you go. Pure decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit in the IRC tonight. CyberLard, Psychros, myself, Sardonyx, and the Soylent Bomb. Are you? Do you have any closing thoughts?
I'm going to start working on a bomb shelter this weekend. I suggest you guys do too.
So, by super bomb fun shelter, you mean cardboard box with as many layers of lead paint as you can put on it, right?
Pretty much it. Then that way, when the bomb doesn't drop and the paint dries, I can eat the tasty, tasty chips.
Ooh, wall candy. All right. That's it. Start hitting sound effects now. As soon as I get the mouse cursor on the sound box going, here we go.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, I'm passing out.